It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. This is the 100th anniversary of World War I. I should say we're in the midst of a multi-year marking of the 100th anniversary of World War I. And coming up this week at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum, there's going to be a lecture on trench warfare in World War I. Mark Depew is a historian. He's a specialist in American and military history. He joins us now. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
1916, a seminal year in a turning point in World War I.
Yeah, you know, the war starts with this flurry of activity. The Germans attacked in both directions, but especially into France and Belgium. Most everybody thought in 1914 it would last just a few months, just like the previous war did in 1870. And 2 years later, it was still going on, but by that time it had bogged down in the trenches. And what we'll be talking about on Thursday, the 14th, is explaining just why combat during World War I did bog down in the trenches like it did, and why it was so deadly and brutal.
One of the things that I think World War I is best known for in military history as a sort of turning point is the advent or the mass adoption of mechanized warfare, right? Can you talk a little bit about how expectations going into World War I might have been confounded by what the reality was like?
Yeah, they start in 1914 and you have these major formations, and it was all about maneuver and firepower. That's always been the equation for military people. And the emphasis was on maneuver. And for the French, it was on the offensive, that their elan could overwhelm anything as long as they had the courage and the will to stay with it. But then you encounter things like modern machine guns and bolt-action rifles that fire much more rapidly than the old muskets or rifled muskets of the Civil War era, and artillery with fuses that gives you air bursts, and you suddenly find out that the lethality of the battlefield had grown exponentially, and all those wonderful maneuvers in open terrain just led to massive casualties.
Massive casualties, and the leadership decides to retrench, literally.
They did. You know, they trenched. You're certainly correct in that respect. And they spent most of the rest of the war trying to figure out how to break out of the trenches. And that's certainly one of the themes that we'll be talking about in this. They tried a variety of different approaches. A lot of it was still kind of tied to the theories that they came into the war, 19th century history. But then you've got things like gas warfare. You've got different new tactics that are being used, a complete evolution of the kind of weaponry that you see, much more heavy artillery. And by the time you get towards the end of the war, they're tinkering along with tanks, but not really mastering the tactical side of how to use the tanks. That happens really after the time frame we're talking about or just introduced. And then you throw in airplanes and how that enters the mix as well.
Can you paint a picture? We mentioned the trenches. What is daily life like in a trench in the midst of World War I?
Maybe this is part of my perverse fascination with the war. I can't imagine living in those trenches day after day. Now, part of the trench line was in good higher ground, but can you imagine being in an area where the trenches are dug? And these aren't shallow trenches. They're 10 feet deep with a firing step, and you've got a high water table where you're constantly fighting water, and you're fighting rats, and you're fighting lice, and there are no creature comforts. It is a misery to be in those trenches day after day. And
the term trench foot, I think, comes to mind,
obviously. Yeah. And that was their existence. And then you put on top of that shelling. Oftentimes the shelling wouldn't go on not for minutes or hours, but for days. And leading up to the Somme, you have several days where there's a constant barrage on the Germans and likewise the counter-battery fire going on as well. So that's where you get the term shell shock also.
Which is what we now know as post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, it's certainly a variation of it, yeah. And the trauma that these soldiers must have lived through was just incredible. And to me, it's unimaginable how they could have done what they did.
So you mentioned the Somme. This is one of the big battles and one of the things you'll be focusing on in your lecture. Can you talk us through the briefest outline for somebody who maybe has very little familiarity with World War I?
Well, I'll start with a very fairly brief discussion about the Battle of Verdun, which was the French version of this nightmare. And then you get to the Somme. And what you need to realize in the Somme is that a couple years before the war begins, and the British Army was tiny in comparison to the French and the German Army, tiny, and it was all volunteers. Well, then they had this flood of volunteers, hundreds of thousands of volunteers that flooded into the British Army and started to form these, a lot of them they called PALS battalions, so a community or a college or something like that would all join up together and, you know, with their brothers in arms and filled with enthusiasm, training. And then this is the first big battle where you see this newly raised army being thrown into the midst. And July 1st is the first day of the battle, and they charge across no man's land after several days of a preparatory artillery fire with the assumption that that would have destroyed, obliterated all of the German trenches and there would have been no opposition. And in most cases, that just wasn't the case. The Germans were able to get to their machine gun nests and able to get to their firing pits, and the casualty rates was horrendous. And I think that if you ask most Brits today who have any understanding of their own history, July 1st, 1916 is the blackest day of their history.
I've heard descriptions of World War I battlefields over the course of years because, as you mentioned, these trenches were largely fixed. There was not a lot of movement back and forth, described as almost moonscapes. They had been pulverized again and again and again.
Yeah, and what you find that by 1916, the Germans started the war with a lot more heavy artillery than the Brits or the French, either one of them had. But by 1916, everybody had figured out if you're going to dig the enemy out of their trenches, you've got to have heavy artillery as well as the light stuff. And you're right. I mean, you go across no man's land, and it's just one crater after another. There's no way you can easily move across that. And when then you get to the point in crossing no man's land, and then you encounter the enemy barbed wire. And the assumption was that the first few days of the barrage were going to cut all the wire, but that didn't necessarily happen either. So now they're caught up in the wire, totally exposed to the enemy fire, and you can't get information back and forth across no man's land. They had telephone wires. There's no radios at this time, and the best way to do it is runners moving back and forth. So once they left the trenches, the generals really had no control over the battle at all.
At the risk of spoiling the end of your lecture, how do they break out of this pattern?
Well, they didn't figure it out in 1916, and I maintain that it was only in 1918 that the Germans finally figured it out. So that'll be a lecture 2 years down the road that we have. And the Germans, mind you, didn't have tanks when they figured out the scheme, the new tactical arrangement to do that.
World War I also gave rise to some of the most significant literature of the early 20th century. We saw Hemingway coming out of there, but also on the European side, the book All Quiet on the Western Front. And you also have an event coming up at the museum later this month, Thursday, July 26th, where you'll be showing the 1930 film version of All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. 1930, well, that's only 12 years past the end of World War I. So these are people who are making this movie who knew what the horrors of the trench warfare was like. And this is an author who had written, a German author with, strangely, a French-sounding name, who writes this seminal book on what warfare was like in the First World War. An American produces the film in 1930, and it didn't take too long for people to figure out the power of the film, and that's one reason why the Nazis, when they came to power, basically forbade it to be shown in their country, because it's any film on World War I is by nature, if it's an accurate portrayal of the war, it's an anti-war film.
It's a horror movie in some respects, not in the way we think of that today, but certainly a movie of horrors.
Well, it's, you know, compared to what we see today on the screen, the level of gore isn't quite there, but it's a very powerful film. And even some 85 years after it was made, it really stands up well. And it's something that if you want to have an understanding of history and you want to have an understanding of this war, it's certainly something you need to see.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Well, it was fun being with you, Brian.
Mark DePue is a historian. He works at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. His lecture on trench warfare in World War I is this Thursday, 6:30 in the Union Theater. Organizers are asking that people make reservations. You can do that on the website of the museum, presidentlincoln.illinois.gov. This is Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey.